problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. She said it's really not my habit to intrude. Furthermore, I hope my meaning won't be lost or misconstrued. But I'll repeat myself at the risk of being crude. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. 50 ways to leave your lover. You just slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just get yourself free. Or hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free. Ooh, slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. You just listen to me. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free. She said, it grieves me so to see you in such pain. I wish there was something I could do to make you smile again. I said, I appreciate that. And would you please explain about the 50 ways? She said, why don't we both just sleep on it tonight? And I believe in the morning you begin to see the light. And then she kissed me. And I realized she probably was right. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. 50 ways to leave your lover. You just slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just get yourself free. Or you hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee. Slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. You just listen to me. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free.
And welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, and you're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and I'm Robert Norris. We'll have a special guest in the studio with us tonight from all the way from Los Angeles, compliments of the Santa Cruz courts, Jason Pascal.
Pascal.
Thank you, Jason. You can grab that mic if you want and belly up to it, so to speak. And we talked about your case in the air before. We're going to talk about it again. Before we do, however, I'm going to get my papers in order. And to do that, I got to, probably go back out to the car to get some stuff. So before we do that, I will perhaps begin with a little. We're out at the Homeless Service Center. I guess it was day before yesterday, getting interviews on folks who want to be plaintiffs in the so-called sleeping ban lawsuit. And that is a lawsuit which we are filing against the sleeping ban, appropriately enough, in your own city, Jason, in Los Angeles, where you're now hanging out, and in San Diego, as well as a couple other cities, Richmond and even, to some extent, Fresno. It is essentially not done. It's either banned by law or police practice to arrest homeless people at night simply for the crime of sleeping, as I was saying.
You know, the real issue with all that, the homelessness, is that every community needs to deal with the issue. Down in L.A., they have one homeless center, and then all the other little towns, little branches of L.A. have nothing at all, so they just come and they gather them.
Right. What I'm going to be doing, and, we'll be talking about that, too, is I'm cutting you off because I want to just play this damn tape. But the tape is it's interviews with people who are out at the Homeless Service Center, many of whom with no legal place to sleep, since there's only 160 spots in the Armory and the the ISSB Interfaith Satellite Shelter program tonight. And they're, you know, there are about 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there. So this...
Probably more than that.
Yeah, well, in Santa Cruz City, that's my estimate. But, you know, I don't know how many people there are out there.
All those people living up on the river.
There's a lot of stuff people up there. And they're, what we're looking at here is, or what we're going to be listening to here shortly, is some interviews. And, hey, those of you who listen to the show know I do a lot of interviews. And tonight is no exception. In case you want to call in, the number is 427-3772. Hey. Give a call if you'd like, 427-3772. Jason's going to be talking about his legal case having to do with he's accused of what? Disturbing the peace?
Let's tell it the truth.
Not the details of it yet, just very quickly.
Charged with disturbing the peace, using fighting words in public.
Fighting words. We're going to have some fighting words in private or maybe in public on the air.
Fighting words in public.
But Jason's fighting back, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, they're trying to ban me in Santa Cruz.
Actually, there's a long history of Jason's struggle here. We'll be talking about that shortly.
Okay, I want to hear about it. So we're here at the Homeless Service Center at, what, about 4:15 or so, and we've got a table here. Folks are standing in line for the meal service, so they say they comida, and we're talking with... Give me a name.
Yeah, Mark.
And Mark, you say you have something to report?
Yeah, we'll leave, we'll get up and go to work in the morning, and twice now we came back and our tent's been totally, one time wiped out, and another time been cut down, and we told it was from the Ranger Wallace, and I'm not the only one. There's quite a few people that he's cut up tents and stuff. And one time it was right in the middle of the rain. We got there and we had to sleep out in the rain with nothing because of that.
And are you still sleeping out?
Yeah, we are.
And have you? How do you know it was Ranger Wallace, not some other group?
No, because there was people by it and stuff. It's came by and,
an account from somebody else.
Oh yes, definitely.
And you want to give the first name of the person who gave the account, not the last name.
Jimmy. Jim. But if there needs to be more, I can get in touch with people and we can get together more on this part.
Okay, sounds good. Now, how long ago did you lose your property?
Oh, about a month ago.
And how many times has it happened?
Twice.
And are you're still outside?
Yes, we are, but we have to take our tent with us every time we go to work and come back. We can't leave nothing out there because he'll destroy it.
What kind of work do you do?
We work at the university, my wife and I.
I'm sorry, Ed?
My wife and I, we work at the university.
Okay. And how long is your commute? Do you have a car? Do you do it by bus?
We do it by bus, So we're gone usually most of the day, but we have to pack everything with us because get back and if he finds it, he'll take it or destroy it.
So you're in apprehension of losing your property and or getting ticketed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I encourage you to join the lawsuit against the sleeping van.
Oh, yes, I'd love to.
Okay. Well... Then, not necessarily for radio broadcast, but for our records, you have to give your name, but we'll see what happens there. We're talking with your name for this purpose is?
Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Talking with?
Well, I was sleeping up there.
What's your name?
Kenny Brentzel.
Go ahead, Kenny. You got a ticket, right?
Yes, I was sleeping up next to the, up by the road up there. On what is that road? Is up to the Ghost of Bin Laman?
Maybe Highway 9, maybe?
Yeah. And the ranger came and he gave me a warning and said, the next time I'm going to give you a ticket. And
did he give you a place to sleep?
No, yeah, he let me stay where I'm at.
Okay, and was this John Wallace, the ranger, or some other ranger?
Well, let me see.
Whip out your ticket here and take a look, see what you got. You're checking your wallet even as we speak. Sun is setting in the horizon. Rick is looking restless. Coral's got a smile on her face. And folks are preparing for the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program bus. Meanwhile, some folks are eating inside. And you're whipping out your ticket here, which is non-traffic notice to appear. And this is
the pissing in
San Francisco Municipal Transit. This must be the pissing in public one. It's not the other one. The yellow ticket. There we go. That's your Santa Cruz ticket, or could well be. And opening it up for the mystery. And the answer to the mystery question is... Take a look here. Hope you didn't piss on the ticket. Let's take a look.
Yeah.
All right, this is... 9.30.016 San Lorenzo Park.
Oh, that's when they got kept for pissing in public.
And this is a pissing in public. We need the camping. Though pissing in public is a necessity if you don't have a place to go. Why didn't you use the restroom?
I didn't know it was there.
I got you. Well, there's something out there, I guess. So.
Yeah,
okay, pulling out another. This one's another white ticket. The man is a fountain of tickets. This is notice to appear. Camping in the park, 212. I bet this is a San Francisco.
Well,
you got a ticket in San Francisco.
Oh.
They drove you out of San Francisco and you came here?
Well, actually, I sort of came here for the Crick Dental Help because it was quicker to see get an appointment for a dentist here.
Uh-huh.
We're in San Francisco. In Oakland, the first appointment would have been a whole year, a whole month to wait for that ticket, to wait for that appointment.
Gotcha.
And then...
So here you are. But you say you did get ticketed here in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Grab some literature if you want.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, sure. Grab that literature. And...
So when did you get this ticket, this for sleeping? You say you may have thrown it away.
Oh,
but...
It must have been on the 9th of... It must have been on...
It's giving you this information.
Yeah.
Let me, would you be interested in being part of a lawsuit against the city of Santa Cruz to end the sleeping ban?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good. So here we go.
So more or less, you don't have to give us the exact stuff, but first of all, give me your name and spell it.
Okay, Kenny. It's B-R-E-N-S-E-L.
I'm at Kenny.
We're talking with
Chris Carter.
And Chris, this is for Free Radio. What's been happening with you in terms of the police?
I haven't been able to sleep.
Because?
We can't sleep.
Insomnia?
Oh, no, because harassment by the cop. Well, not harassment, but basically cops just coming by and nudging you and making you wake up when you're kind of off in a sleeping bag at 3 o'clock in the morning.
When did this last happen?
Last night.
And where were you?
I was
more or less. Downtown, Poconip?
Last night I was behind Ross.
Behind Ross. And is this in the city limits or outside the city?
Not today, it's inside.
And what happened? About what time did the police show up?
Well, first at 11, and then I moved from under the bridge there by Ross. And then I moved closer to the building. And then at about 3:30, they woke me up again.
Same police or different police?
Same guy.
Do you know the name of the cop?
No.
You know what he looked like?
No.
Was he courteous? Was he abusive?
Oh, he wasn't abusive.
But he was waking you up.
But he wasn't courteous either.
Now, were you sleeping alone or were you with somebody else?
I was by myself.
And has this happened to you at any other time?
Oh, yeah.
Previous time, the last time it happened before that was?
It happens every day. Yeah, during the day and during at night.
And what? Give me an example of how, say, it happened in the last week. Another instance of it.
An incident happened right there, what I'm talking about at Ross's. We were on the levee, and we were all kind of just taking a nap. And
how many people were you?
It was about 6 or 7.
Okay. And was there other illegal stuff, like open containers, alcohol,
no.
Meth,
no.
Coke, pot?
No, we were just trying to get some sun in.
About what time of day did that? Were you approached by?
It was about 2.
And who? What kind of a? What? Parks and Rec?
It was Park and Rec.
It was a ranger?
Yeah.
And what did he say to you?
He just said we had to move it along.
Oh, every time I'm here, anyway, he gave me.
Yeah. We're not even allowed to stay there anymore.
Well, you're not allowed. If you're on the river side of the levee path, it's illegal to be there after dark.
Today they told us that it's private property.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, where exactly were you?
Right before the bridge on the levee.
The freeway bridge?
Yep.
And before the bridge on the Santa Cruz side or on the inland side?
Santa Cruz side.
I don't know. It sounds
They were cutting the grass, and they woke us up and said that it's private property, and we had to not be here anymore. That happened today.
And was that a ranger or a Parks and Rec?
Park and Rec.
Park and Rec. Same guy?
Yeah.
Did you notice his name? Was it a kind of a buff guy, short, or was it different? Different guy.
He was built. He was fit.
Stocky?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. John Wallace is the chief ranger. He often makes these stops himself, although he now has 3 additional people helping him, so I'm not sure who that would be. What about downtown? Do you spend any time downtown, Pacific Avenue?
I don't know if you remember, but I was the guy that held myself up at Late Buffet.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
You're the infamous criminal.
Yeah, the infamous.
My God, a direct interview with the man who got the police to what? Wall off four blocks? Give us the inside story. What was happening there?
What was happening? It was basically whenever they blew it into a big incident. Whenever they called CB, well, the news came out and started taping what I was doing. I just turned it into a big hoax.
So what were you? Give us.
And we're actually talking to the guy who who held off the police for, what, 8 hours at La Vie restaurant with, he's going to give his whole story after our live interview. We have, and as I said before, we in the studio with us, we have Jason Pascal, and we're going to talk with him in just a moment. But you've been listening to interviews at the Homeless Service Center, and this is Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and we also have a couple of other people lurking in the shadows. May have some surprises for us. Who knows? Maybe they have absolutely nothing to say or just wandering around to cluster around my celebrity status, which, of course, I appreciate. Jason, welcome to Free Radio.
Greetings.
Now, Jason, let me summarize, as I understand it, the sordid history of police harassment you've been suffering over the last 5 years in Santa Cruz, beginning to some extent with the Baker series of incidents way back in 2002.
Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker.
Right. You were, of course, doing tarot readings on Pacific Avenue.
Yes.
And you were harassed for a variety of things, medical marijuana use, possession of needles, but you're a diabetic.
Yes.
You were jailed for that, but then released later. You were arrested for use of a milk crate as a display device.
Yes.
You were arrested for telling a fortune without a license.
Yes, twice.
You were deported to New Hampshire on an old marijuana charge.
Extradited to New Hampshire over half an ounce of marijuana at the same time that Valerie Corral had like 20,000 tons of marijuana growing in the FBI.
Or game. Certainly a lot of marijuana. Certainly she has legalized.
But you know what? I really do have epilepsy, and I really am a diabetic, and I had a medical card, and they did everything to have me extradited to New Hampshire.
This was back in 2002, 2003. Yeah. Then in 2004, thereabouts, or was it 2005?
I don't remember.
You were banned from the mall in a conviction, which essentially involved, in your view, kind of a hate crime. You were harassed by a couple of people, white supremacists, you say?
Yes, yeah.
And that
I call them surf crackers. Sorry, but that's just the way I see them.
Not like soda crackers. Probably
they got that 1950s swoop back hair, just like those redneck crackers down south that wanted to be all loud and boisterous. I could see their drunk asses. They're the same type.
So you eventually
like 1950s and stuff with their little stupid trucks and their jeans.
Your public defender at that time pled you to a charge or persuaded you to plead to a not guilty plea, just he wanted to get the hell out of town? Or?
Well, he just thought that I had disturbed the peace. And, you know, and the cop had come, and he'd given me a ticket for giving a psychic reading without a metaphysical permit. I told him to go fuck himself. I was walking back up the street. At that point, a boy named Richard Bailey, who is related to Officer Bailey of the Santa Cruz PD, runs up to me and says, "Hey, why are you talking about the Santa Cruz PD like that?" And I said, "Because it's America, and here's the thing. Santa Cruz PD are a bunch of assholes, and so aren't you." And at that point, I kept going around, and I was walking. I was moving up. He kept talking smack to me. Next thing I know, he waves the cops over. Cops come over, put me in handcuffs. I was brought to jail that time for, you know, disturbed for fighting words in public. The guy said I told him to go around the back of a building or so. I have no idea.
And did you in fact, attempt to engage in a championship fight behind the back of the building?
No, I didn't. I was actually.
Why not? Are you a chicken? Are you a coward, Jason?
No, Captain. But the guy he looked really like, you know, he'd probably become a cop in his future because, you know, those guys get.
Well, didn't you want to give him some
shit.
Workout before he got into the force? I mean, come on.
No, I really.
So in any case, you were charged with fighting words, disturbing the peace, and what happened? And that was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And you pled to that.
Yes.
Because your attorney persuaded you to be found guilty, or what?
The thing is I was living down in L.A. I don't have time to come up here and deal with these idiots, and you know, I just got tired of it, you know. So I just said I'll let this one go. I pled nolo.
And then you got an unusual probation condition. What was that condition, Jason?
There was no fine or jail, but they said I couldn't go on to the Pacific Mall from the clock tower all the way to Laurel Street. And they also said that I had to go to any businesses that I wanted to shop in through the back door.
The back door.
So I'd have to go to Front Street or over to Cedar Street in order to get into a store and shop. I could shop on Pacific Mall. I just couldn't go in through the indoor on, you know, I had to go in through the outdoor.
Front door. Well, you know, we have the colored entrance and we have the wide entrance, and you've got to, you know, make sure
You know, and then the district attorney, his name is Robert E. Lee.
His mom did that. It's not his fault.
I don't care. It's like naming your child Hitler, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you just have no respect for Civil War heroes Deep South.
No,
I think
they should have taken him and they should have hung his ass right there at Appomattox Courthouse. Treason.
There you have it. Treason against, that's another story for another day. But anyway, that was your, you know, you stayed away for a year. You came back.
Abraham Lincoln, that's who was against.
Abe Lincoln. He was the guy who didn't want to end slavery in the United States.
You know, he wanted
to keep businesses booming, and so he wanted to keep the South in the country. It was a very financial decision.
Kevin, you don't know what you're talking about. It was a time. He was an Aquarius. He thinks he's right about everything. Usually they are.
He was a Republican Party politician is what he was. But let's not get into that, Aubrey.
He was a good lawyer.
That could be. I don't know much about his lawyer skills.
And he rode down the Missouri and the Ohio rivers and the Mississippi on rafts.
You've been studying this Lincoln guy, have you?
Oh, Lincoln was very talented. He could take a little bitty word and make it into something very significant.
Well, he had this debate with Douglas. I heard about that one. Anyway, the reality is that you came back to town about 6 months ago, and we saw you downtown denouncing the merchants as racist, denouncing the community as racist, and naturally they didn't like you, so what's the deal?
Not only just racist, but also classist. That was my
issue. Well, you got to have money, honey. What's your deal, man? You don't come to town without any money.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe
they
should.
Are you some kind of beggar?
Yeah, well, they need to maybe drop the amount that they put on taxes in the hotels, because the city charges like 10% on their taxes.
Well, that's to pay for poor and homeless people and services, man.
They don't have any services.
No, I'm not saying my boy.
They're living up on the river, Robert, with clothes that are rags.
Yes.
And
well,
smell of pee and beer.
Well, they don't have public bathrooms at night, so it's a problem.
You got downtown, you know, Lily White.
You came back. You were on Pacific Avenue in front of O'Neill's. I remember because I was in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz doing a protest against now our mayor.
Actually, I was right in front of the statue.
The bizarre sculpture that's in front of the Cinema 9 or across the street from the Cinema 9 Theater on Pacific. Now, I got some different accounts from homeless people that you were actually kind of making a ruckus there, Jason. You were cussing out the town, and then when somebody told you to move, according to the move-along law, which, of course, sucks, but there you moved along. You thought it was your persuasion that it was O'Neill's, the sports shop, that told you to move. So you then moved closer to O'Neill's, although legally, within the appropriate legal distance, and began denouncing customers coming into and going out of O'Neill's.
Yes.
Is that a friendly thing to do in a town like Santa Cruz?
No. But this isn't a friendly town. This is a town that exploits illegal aliens from Marini's coffee shop and that little ice cream shop. They have them all. They just exploit people here. You got all Watsonville. These people live in opulent playground of wealth where they can run around and be bohemian and talk about how they love to go to India, but they exploit people and they don't really want to deal with the truth of Santa Cruz County. And they can't handle the fact that these people made their money off of exploitation of people that live.
So you're a big defender of illegal immigrants? Is that what you're saying? You want our country to be overrun by individuals of darker hues?
Well, don't blame me for that. You got to blame them for that. They're the ones that keep shipping them in and letting them live down the flats so they could exploit them.
So you were
criticizing. They live down the flats, you know, and then they're all in the courtrooms.
Well, let's get back to what you were arrested for, what you were cited for. What happened the day that has brought you back to Santa Cruz in the court?
Oh, well, I had to come today and fire my lawyer.
You mean the public defender that we are paying for a public expense? You fired this poor woman?
She was a public protector.
What's her name?
Kristen Carter.
Kristen Carter.
Yeah.
Kristen Carter?
Yes.
Now, well, before we get into why you fired your lawyer, what were you originally arrested for? What happened that provoked this?
Well, it was a long...
We've actually talked about this on the air before, but let's run through it.
What happened was, as I was telling people, don't shop at O'Neill's. It's a classist and a racist store. I told them that they shouldn't purchase products from that store, that they don't support artists in the community, and that they're kind of racist.
Are these factual statements, or are you just pissed at them for telling you to move along every hour?
Why are they asking me to move along, and they're not asking anybody else to move along?
Well, because you're more outspoken, and besides, you have the wrong skin color.
Do they own the street?
In Santa Cruz?
Yes.
They act like they do.
They act like they do, but they don't own the street.
So,
the Boston Massacre occurred was in the Commons of Boston.
Mm.
And it's a Commons. They don't own the street. They make a statue of that guy with his little saw, you know. And they laughed at that guy and were mean and everything else to him. So, you know, they have his ass removed and put a restraining order from him from going on Pacific.
What, the anarchist communist leader hero Tom Scribner, the musical saw player whose statue is in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz?
Yes.
Where I was arrested for sitting on the base of that statue back in
1999. Yeah.
I remember that place. Actually, they dismissed the charges against me when I showed a photo of three city council members sitting in the same place. That was the old days.
Well.
Yes. But anyway, beginning back to the situation, so you were, let me understand this, because I did get some critical accounts of you from other street people who said Jason was going off on, he was loud and he was abusive in his speech, and he was, can you give us an example of the kind of rap you were giving to the community?
Yeah, I said don't shop at any place in Santa Cruz. You might as well take your money and go shop over in Watsonville, because at least it's a brown skin community and they're being exploited. I said that if you buy stuff from Santa Cruz, it brings you bad luck. And I wouldn't purchase any products from these stores because they bring you bad luck. And I said that if you buy a surfboard from O'Neill's, you'll probably get cancer or you'll die. Or you'll have a drowning. You know, that's what, you know, that's what I really
hope. Now, wait a minute. Are you suggesting that the O'Neill surfboards are carcinogenic?
No, I'm just suggesting that, you know, if you buy that product, it's a negative product. I wouldn't buy anything from that sons of bitches. Especially after they kicked that old man O'Neill. They just took over his stuff. Guy's dying, you know. And the thing is that it's just a takeover. They just take over. They take over the city. And then when they see that, you know, now they're all worried because they made so much money on real estate here in Santa Cruz. Now what's going to happen to all your big property and how you guys all got rich? Now you're all going to be caught with a bunch of crap. You know, that's what's going to happen.
Wait a minute. I mean, the real estate bubble breaks. Is that what you're suggesting?
Oh, yeah. Wait till 2008,
2009. We can invest in other things. Now, come on. You always diversify your investments.
Yeah, diversity. Jason. They don't like diversification.
Well, in your investments, you must diversify.
Mexicans and lily white people. While you got Oakland right up the street, no money, people not working. Every little restaurant
there
has
you
illegal
were. In
aliens
front of, you were
and
in
everything.
Front of O'Neill's. You were telling people not to shop at this allegedly racist store. So I've not seen specifically racist policies at O'Neill. Did you see black people turned away? Did you see Hispanic people kicked in the butt? What did you see?
No, I just saw the fact that they asked the police to move me along when I was protesting the conditions of downtown Santa Cruz.
And you thought that was an example of racist policies?
Move along. That's like move to the back of the bus. I mean, why should I have to move? They don't own the street. And the police are enforcers of the merchants' demands. That's what it is. They're enforcing the same thing with the Downtown Association and everybody else. They run the artist out. You got a bunch of meth addicts and cocaine heads and drunks down there. But if you're an artist, they don't want you down there. It's okay if you're just out there just doing whatever you want to do. But you know, if you do something creative or you're making money or giving white girls hugs, they hate your guts.
What are you doing giving them white girls hugs? That's my neck of the woods.
Hey,
son.
I love to give them all hugs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know Robert, I'm better looking than you are. That's how it boils down.
It's because I got more hair than you do. We got a caller here.
That's good.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Jason and Robert.
Hi, it's Madison, international artist.
Hey, international artist Madison, what's up?
Madison Fitzgerald, if you want to type it in. Madison has two C's in Fitzgerald's classic spelling. Go look at my art.
What's your point there, Madison?
Well, I agree with this man, and the artists are unwelcome in an art wannabe art town. What a joke, Santa Cruz. This town is laundering so much money on that Pacific Avenue. I think that the city council should be put on the frying pan.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold it. I've heard you make this allegation before. Please,
look at all
wait a minute. Hold it. Hold it. Who is laundering money out of what front? We want to go because I want to get my money washed.
Okay, which ones? Well, just look, they open and close every 5 minutes.
Give me one name,
just
please,
sit and
Madison.
Watch. Just no, you go and
No. You either got to give me a name or it ain't. It's just a game, babe. What's the deal?
Okay, there's a. I don't know the names. I don't even bother to learn them because there's open and close.
Wait a minute. This sounds more and more hysterical and ridiculous. So give me a name of somebody who's laundering money, or else put a lid on it. Forgive me for putting it that way.
It's like Bava or something. I don't know. It's a jewelry store right around the corner.
A jewelry store, right? I want you to go out there and find out about it.
Listen, she may actually have something here, you know. First of all,
Robert, would you quit arguing and let me finish? You're
she may have something
here.
She might, but I've heard the same story for months. I don't get no specifics. Go ahead, Madison. Roll on. What's your next point?
Okay, there's several T-shirt shops. They open and close all the time. There's been several jewelry stores. And if you just watch the customers. Watch who's going in, who's going out, and who has bags, where the bags are. Because on Lower Pacific and half of the businesses down there are cleaning money. And I honestly feel that the guy that's running the Downtown Association, I think he's probably an agent, a CIA plant, and he's there to try to change the attitude of the Santa Cruz that we all know, love, and want from way back in the
day. Wait a minute. That's a fault. Just a second. That's former Pizza My Heart, Keith Holtaway, the man who gave us the parking lot panic law.
The downtown ass.
How can you
ass.
Say such a thing about it? First
the
of all.
The blonde guy?
Yeah, that's the one.
The downtown
the
ass.
Yeah,
No. No,
you know.
But here's the thing, Madison. You're making a lot of charges, and I don't like Keith's position on a number of issues. But I can't say that I've ever seen him laundering money or working for the CIA.
I didn't say he was. I was just saying I have a feeling that he's in with this little.
Well, you have a lot of feelings, Madison. But I mean, come on. I mean, are we?
But you got to really look at this. You know, first of all, look at the medical marijuana. I love to smoke bud. Why is it that these certain people are allowed to grow as much as they want, but anybody else starts when they knock them out real quick? I mean, this is really dangerous. Even the politicians in the town are involved and tell the federal government to fuck off. I like to smoke my bud. I smoke it every day, 3 or 4 times a day. But, you know, I'm not such a chicken shit that I have to go get a little medical card and go sit in a club because I'm scared. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, these people are really, they're making loot and they're making it hand over fist. And you know what? Those people probably need to be stopped because, you know what? This city, we can see the city itself can't even handle, you know, itself in a fair, unbiased way in the court system. So God help anybody that tries to start a business up here in town. They're probably the ones that would call the CIA or the FBI and say, or the DA and say, oh, this certain person over here, I'm going to have to drop a dime on him because he's making more money.
Those people are selling more drugs here than the regular people. And I feel that the drug sales should be legalized.
How about sex slavery in
Watsonville? Frying pan for the laundering. Because we're not getting our tax base.
Gang members.
We don't have an art town.
Salinas
and the drugs are in collusion with the military. We don't need that. We need it to be with the people.
Well, Madison, I agree with you on the drug war. I don't know that I see any federal government involvement in selling drugs. I think it's probably a local enterprise. But I'm not, again, not much of a grassroots seller of meth or cocaine or anything of that sort. Somebody might hook me up. You know, I suppose it's possible. Anyway, Madison, thank you. Anything more you wish to say to the infamous Jason here?
No, Jason, I think you should just keep talking. I think you're fabulous. You're very far left, but considering what's going on here, I think it's refreshing to hear you, and I'm sorry that, you know, you're not...
Well, Madison, you can come and support me tomorrow because I'm going to be down on the mall, so you can come down there and let me give you a psychic reading out there.
Oh, I am.
I'm
going
to be out.
But, yeah.
Well, I know. I hear that all the time. I love being your own psychic. It's like trying to be your own dentist and trying to draw your own teeth.
I know. You can't.
That's
not
good.
It's like hearing yourself sing.
You should come down there.
Right.
You should come down there.
The psychic told herself, don't. You're going to get you're going to get a ticket. And I didn't listen to the psychic, and I got one. And then the next 2 days later, I got another one.
All right.
Psychic.
Hey, you too.
Psychic.
Hold it.
Psychic.
Hey, get a room. All right, we're gonna move on to the next caller. 427-3772. It's Shock Jock Norris here and his questionable African-American astrological.
So this isn't your fucking buddy you rub heads on here, Robert.
Let's get back to the issue at hand, which is your criminal behavior on Pacific Avenue. Now, You then move. You were told to move along when you had been denouncing the merchants, apparently in a strident tone of voice, and perhaps harassing the passers-by. Were you harassing the passers-by?
No. Look, this is America. I wasn't saying there was a fire in a crowded movie theater. I just told them. I said, you know, you purchase products down here. You're helping to kill us down here on the mall. It's like they killed crazy Jimmy Klein, and now you have Robert Stattinson, wherever the hell he is, Statton that walks up and down the street, you know what I'm saying?
Robert Stephan,
you know, but you know I'm just
saying. He is an attraction. You're talking about the pink guy.
Yeah, I told him, you know, I was actually the one that got him to start doing that, Robert.
You are the responsible for Mr. Slowman.
I didn't tell him to wear a dress, right. So I told him to get an overcoat, like one of those pimp overcoats that was pink with like stuff on it, and get like those, you know, those scarves that look a little fluffy and pink. I told him, I said, that'd be kind of cool. Next thing I know, the man looked like Miss Havisham. He hasn't taken a shower in about 40 years.
Now, I don't know that. I've never smelled anything unusual about Robert.
Robert's funky.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's a hard rodeo. You could take a sniff of me and tell me what you think, but perhaps a little later we can get into that.
No, Robert.
Anyway, you were in front of O'Neill's. You were originally closer to the Cinema 9. Along came Officer somebody and moved you along. I think it was Officer Hoppy, maybe.
Yes.
I have your police report here with four different officers reporting in.
He told me that I had to move 100 feet in 1 hour.
Right, and so you moved 100 feet over to closer to the entrance of O'Neill's, but still within a distance, and then what happened?
Then they came out in the front of O'Neill's and started sending people over to my team.
They being?
The employees of O'Neill's.
Because you were, can you give us an example of how you were, let's imagine you're on the street, and I'm about to enter O'Neill's, what do you say to me?
I'm saying, don't shop in that store. Those people are classist and racist, and they're trying to kill the artist here in Santa Cruz.
Out of my way, Violet.
Don't
move aside,
don't push him.
Don't. Back off.
I'd tell you to go blow it out your ass.
I
that's
see.
Okay.
Fighting words,
yeah,
eh?
I did. I'd say exactly that.
What did you say?
I told them to go blow it out their ass.
Now, that is certainly. Now, you see, if you're going to say that on the radio, which you apparently have, and you're standing trial for fighting words with disturbing the peace, you're making a bold statement.
It doesn't matter. What in the hell is a fighting word? This is America. I could say whatever I want. They allow these people to put nooses up and everything else, but I can't call a guy a pussy? Give me a break. That's exactly what he was. He was being that. He came over. He started with me. I was sitting down. That man came up right in my face, came about a foot away from me, and said, "Hey, man, what's your problem?"
This is when you were near O'Neill's?
Yeah.
And what happened then?
I told him, I said, "Dude, please get the fuck away from me, you pussy." He goes, "What? That's it, I'm calling the police." And he called the police on me. Yeah. You know?
So
calling him a pussy.
So
I said, "You're a pussy."
So
he is. He's a pussy. His name is Chapman, right? Chapman.
Oh, I don't know. Yes, the police reporter does say that a man named Chapman.
Tell him what I said.
Was shopping at O'Neill's. Chapman left O'Neill's. He was accosted by a male subject. Later identified as
Pascal. Sitting down. How could I accost anybody? I was sitting down.
Chapman said Pascal had acted without provocation. Pascal cursed Chapman for shopping at O'Neill's. Chapman asked Pascal what his problem was. Pascal started insulting Chapman and other people who were in the store. Pascal specifically called Chapman and his wife a cunt.
Well, you know, let's look at that word cunt. Do you realize the word Venus? Look where Venus came out of the water with a shell, and that's why they call that part of the shell.
So
if they want to deal with the religious terms of a psychic, I'll bring this up.
Wait a minute. If I call you a nigger, are we going to create some way that that's okay for me to do it on the street?
You're going to cause a problem.
Yeah, well,
that's
the point. I mean, call a woman a cunt.
But they have a right to say that. They have a right to say
nigger. Well, don't have a right to say you're... Well, yeah,
they have a right to say honky. They have a right to hang up a noose if they want to. But... You know, the minute I call somebody a pussy, that's when the police come over and jump on me and actually arrest me.
Well, didn't you tell me that you also yourself put in a call to the police because you...
I was the first one who called the police.
And why was that? What happened there?
Well, at the time that I was telling people don't shop at O'Neill's, this young man was talking to the employees out in front. They were urging people on to come over and leave sex wax on my table and little stupid ornaments from O'Neill's on my table. And I told him.
Your table, it should be said, has had some stones on it, had some cards,
tarot
cards. A gypsy fortune teller charlatan.
No, I'm not a gypsy. I'm not a charlatan. I'm a psychic, an artist, a stand-up comedian, and I'm also
and a hustler extraordinaire. You're trying to hit me up for dinner, as
Captain,
I recall.
Well, you know what, Captain? I tell him, you know, it's going to take some money to make some money, Robert.
You
got to give
a little bit sometimes.
I guess
so. I don't know what kind of money I'm making off this show.
Well, Captain,
anyway, we're talking to Jason Pascal back in town.
You guys always have a little bit of money somewhere,
after having been driven off the mall by four police officers when he called the police.
I called the police because this guy spit on me and called me a nigger.
So what was the nature? When you, did he walk up to you and just spit on you and say, hey, nigger, and walk off, or what?
No, he was on a BMX 21-speed bicycle type thing.
Right.
And he goes over, he starts talking to the people that are managing O'Neill's. They whispered to him. He got on his bike and rode his bicycle over kind of an arch, was standing up on his bicycle. And then next thing I know, he was kind of moving the bike back and forth and doing like these tricks. And goes, oh, yeah, O'Neill's has been here a hell of a lot longer than you have, you fucking nigger. And he spit. The spit landed on my forehead and on my pants. I dialed 911, called the police. That's when Mr. Chapman came over and said, hey, what's your problem over here? You know, and that's what I told him. I said, get the fuck away from me. You're a cunt.
And then what happened when the police arrived?
The police went over and talked to the O'Neill's people. And look here. His name, I believe, is McKay. His name is McKay. He was the manager. He was like the main employee who was urging him on. Said that he didn't know who this guy was. And I've heard through rumors in the rumor mill that this guy is...
Mark McKay, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the guy that spit on me.
Okay.
What was his name again, Robert?
The name of the employee is Mark McKay.
Yeah, I'm talking about the guy that we were talking about before.
The Phil Chapman?
No, the guy that spit on me. I forgot what his name was.
You're saying that you've heard through the rumor mill that his name is Zach Wormhout?
Yes.
That's what you thought his name is.
Yes.
Now, how do you, this, of course, is a serious charge in terms of a politician. It's because Marty Wormhout is our former supervisor and former mayor. And Zach Wormhout may, if it's the same Wormhout.
I'm not getting the file. I've asked to have there was on August 7th, on the time that this happened, the very first time I saw my lawyer, I said, I need to have a copy of the file. And the file that I asked
The police report that had the name of the person who allegedly spat on you, who you said spat on you.
Yes.
It
referred to case 07S-06874, and this is about an investigation into me being spit on. I was the first one to call 911.
Now, did the police ever get back to you on this investigation
no,
since you were the complainant?
Never, ever.
Didn't they not, in fact, take you to jail?
They took me to jail, yes.
And how long were you in jail?
They kept me there an hour.
And when they released you, did you ever hear anything more about
never.
This
I called,
report that you'd made?
I never heard anything back. I've asked my lawyers to get me copies of that file. I've asked for, you know, I asked in court today. A subpoena was put out. They didn't honor the subpoena. It was supposed to have been to my lawyer on the 11th.
We're talking about you were subpoenaing the record of what did the police report show about the person you think may be Zach Wormhout.
Yes. Or somebody, I don't know what, I don't really want to say that because I'm not sure yet because I haven't seen the file and I don't know.
But you heard this through
people in downtown that are, they're like locals.
People who witnessed the incident or people who are inside the DA's office?
People who know, they've talked to people. I think it's known in circles here and it came out and...
Well, but I mean, was this someone who did he get? Where did the person get the information from? Through the court system, through the police department, psychic readings.
I don't have any idea where he got that information.
It has to also be pointed out that this incident happened on July 15th of this year.
Yeah.
It is now December 13th.
Yeah, I still haven't.
This is
the file.
6 months later, and. You know, you say that you had actually had a falling out with your public defender. You actually had to go to court to fire her today?
Yeah, I fired my...
Her name?
Kristen Carter.
And why did you fire Kristen Carter?
Well, you know, I've been asking for this case file because, you know, I mean, it's important to my case. You know, why was I yelling? Why was I screaming? And why did I call a guy a cunt? You know, at that same point, the guy had just spit on me.
Another guy.
The guy that had spit on me. The one I think is this guy named...
Well, you said Chapman was the one you called the cunt, and that was later, but...
Yeah, but this was before Chapman called the police, I had called the police about being spit on.
Right, right. But the actual the interaction you had with Chapman was prompted by your brother being upset by this incident that happened with respect. Of course, there are some who would say, if you're going to stand outside O'Neill's, accosting every customer who goes in, denouncing them, denouncing their wives, and so forth, then you might expect to get, should we say, an angry, if not a potentially violent reaction. What are you going to say to that?
Well, you know what? Yeah, but you guys, if somebody gets violent with me, then that should allow me to get violent right back with them.
But that's the whole point of a disturbing the peace statute. They want to stop that kind of escalation from happening. Hence, they will say, we'll arrest the person who is provoking this.
Well, they also shouldn't come up and precipitate that type of energy by giving people tickets for giving psychic readings and harassment and such things like that. Downtown Association and murder and corruption and everything else that takes part in the city, that they take part in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I agree with that. But
that disturbs my peace. You know what else disturbs my peace? Those loud motorcycles. You know, they give people a speeding ticket.
We have a call. Maybe this is the SPD calling in.
A loud ticket for playing music, but they can lay there.
Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Jason and Robert and the mystery man in the corner here.
Hi, Robert.
Madison, you're back. Go ahead.
I totally agree with this man in terms of how...
I found a new love here.
Listening to men talk about other men.
Uh-huh.
Well, in Santa Cruz, I've lived in 40 cities. They're some of the rudest men I have ever seen exist in this city. And there's a lot of single guys, but they chase women down the street screaming at us. They come right up to us at our cars.
And they're drunk.
How are you? It's just quite rude. And I see them every day. Yeah, there's lots of them are drunk and high. And I see them bothering the artists downtown. I see them bothering each other.
How about the guys that wear those...
A gigantic mind your manners zone is what we need.
How about those guys that wear those little khaki shorts and little Hawaiian shorts, and they wear their hair down to about their shoulders, usually a little bit white? I don't care
what they look like, but unless they're rude to each other. I mean, I have to open my home all the time because I hear it inside.
How would you feel if you walked into O'Neill's and Jason here called you a cunt for doing that? What would be your reaction to that?
I would say, "What's your problem, buddy?" And then I'd say, "You know, you're going to have to mind your manners."
What would you say to that, Jason?
If he came near me at all, I would probably call the police and or deck him.
Exactly. I didn't come near anybody. I was sitting down in a chair.
But if, you know, they were sitting in front of my home just going off because I have a home office and I have clients. I mean, if you want to medicate, go to the park because I have an office with clients and I prefer that they, you know what I mean, have a little gentler experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you were standing out here just harassing my life, you know, or my business, I would probably call the police.
So what do you think? You think Jason was properly hauled away?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that...
Is that because of your fascination with African-American men? Now, what's the truth?
Hey, now, listen, Robert. You know, look, I just want to tell you something real quick. The thing is that, you know, first of all, I have a right to say whatever I want to say. I'm not saying there's a fire in a movie theater. I'm not getting up and walking towards anybody. I'm sitting down. I could say whatever I want. They shouldn't have ever called the police on me. And since they called the police on me, it just shows the example of the type of behavior I've had to go through before.
So suppose a bunch of Klan members are outside an African-American center shouting, "Nigger, nigger, nigger, get the goddamn niggers out of town. Sign up here."
I had that in front of my house.
Well, is that disturbing the peace?
No.
That's not disturbing the peace. I've had that
in front of my house. I went out and settled the statement.
I have a right to come back out there and tell, you know, the same thing right back. I have a right to do that. If they hang up a noose, that's a hate crime,
what Zach did. You know, he was,
I don't know that's his name for certain. You know, I still have not gotten the file, so I got to make sure. I'm pretty sure that's why they're not giving it to me.
He's got red brown hair. He's about 5'8". Kind of a surf type, you know, average.
Well, this guy had a mohawk, and he was tall, and he had a mohawk. It was a big mohawk.
So it may not be. We may have to apologize to Zach Wormhout.
I don't know, that's him. It's just a rumor going around. I have to check out this file. Having slandered some innocent person
on the air, we move on to our next victim. Thank you, Madison.
All right.
So, Jason, whoever it was, I'm concerned that your public defender, first of all, did not want to try to get you the report, the police report, that would let you know who this was and what the outcome of the investigation was, because the police report you have here talks about your arrest. It talks about interviews that they've had with the employees of O'Neill's, but it doesn't talk about they're tracking down the person who you say spat at you and said you're a nigger.
Well, yeah, it does, because I have a witness in here who talks about the fact.
But you didn't get the second report, the one that has more details in it.
This is
5 or 6 months later,
yes.
And your public defender apparently was not terribly, you're telling me, not terribly interested in getting the report?
No, she was actually resistant to me getting any information. I would call her, well, I don't see how this has any bearing in your case. Or, you know, then Judge O'Neill tried to have my case brought down to traffic court, and I objected. And she said, well, if you want a misdemeanor, then fine. She hasn't even seen the file, so, you know, it just goes to show. They're public pretenders. They're there to get you in, get you out, get you charged, get your money. And they, you know, it's just I'm sure that they're overworked. She may actually be a talented lawyer. But what I saw was a person that figured, oh, well, he's not going to know the difference, and we'll just end up sweeping him under the rug like we sweep everybody else. Stay away order. And no telling. Maybe I had heckled her. I don't know. All I know is that I have a file. I'm allowed that file, and I'm being denied.
You're talking
file.
About this police report about the other person who spat at you.
It's okay for you to denounce
people, but you're saying he called you a nigger as though that's something you didn't have a right to do, or you just...
No. The fact is he fucking spit at me.
That's the point.
But
then you mentioned he called you a nigger. Why do you mention that as well?
Because it's what happened. It's a course of events that occurred.
Right.
You
so, but you're not saying he shouldn't have been allowed to say that.
No, I'm not saying. If he wants to call somebody a nigger or whatever, I call him a cracker. That's what he is. To me, he's one of those surf boys, looks like one of those 1950s rednecks that were yelling and screaming and talking about niggers this and niggers that. He looks just like him. I've seen him before. I've seen that. Just trash.
Well, the thing about the attorneys the thing about the attorney wanting to send your case downstairs means you wouldn't get a jury trial and you would lose her as a public defender because you're not allowed to have public defenders.
And I wouldn't have a stenographer to record any of the events that occurred.
And you would lose the public record in that respect too.
Yeah.
And you would also get the dubious benefit of having Commissioner Kim Basket, or Basket Case Basket, as I've sometimes called her, listening to your case. You're tuned to Free Radio, by the way, in case you're wondering what this is all about. 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me, Jason Pascal, Robert Norse, some other character with sandals on, who we'll talk about in a minute, maybe, if he's lucky. And if he's got anything to say, other than who knows what the man has got, he's wandering in from the wilderness. And if you've got something you want to say, you can call in. 427-3772 is the number, 427-3772. If you want to listen to the show later because you just can't stand it now, but you know it's very important, but you just, for some reason, you have to leave the room, the number is an archive, and it's archived at the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, www.huffsantacruz.org. When's your next court day, Jason?
Well, I'm scheduled to be back up here on January the 4th and also January the 7th.
Why two dates?
I have no idea. It's Judge Kelly's decision.
And you actually asked Judge Kelly, or Kangaroo Kelly, as I call him, to throw out these charges?
Yeah, because, you know, there was a subpoena put in, a motion that was finally put in by my lawyer a week ago, and they were supposed to have had those files on the 11th.
Specifically the file about the guy who...
Yes, who spit
on report, the police report.
I show up at court today. It's 2 days past the limit of that subpoena date. And they're still trying to proceed forward. Like, I'm just going to be so dumb that I wouldn't say, hold on for a minute.
But not just the prosecution.
The whole courtroom was packed with black people, too.
Not just the judge, but your own public defender was all set to roll right past this.
Yeah, she was angry that I actually showed up this morning.
Really?
She was perturbed that I showed up this morning.
And now, you said you were looking, did you actually schedule the Marston hearing?
I was in Arkansas visiting my family, and, you know, she wasn't responding back to my phone calls. The public defender's office wasn't responding back at all. Nobody was responding back. I'm asking, where's the file? Finally, I just said, I'm fed up, and I called for a Marston hearing.
Marston hearing is a what?
That's where you show up in court and say, I'm discontent with the service that I'm receiving from this lawyer. I don't have confidence in her anymore, and that's that. You know?
Well, if you were asking for a Marston hearing, surely she would have assumed you're going to show up for your own Marston hearing.
Yeah, but, you know, I think she just thought, oh, well, he's another one of those clients, you know, and that's what she thought. But I showed up today. I was on a. This is how I did it. I worked a full day out on Venice Beach, did psychic readings all day. I went downtown. I jumped on a bus. I rode up here all night long. I walked around from 5:30 in the morning smoking some weed till about 8:30. I went to court 8:30, and then I had to wait until 11 o'clock. And that courtroom was fucking freezing. It was freezing, man.
It was actually 27 degrees. And
it was freezing.
I think it was 19 degrees in Felton last night, actually.
Yeah, this is totally ridiculous.
Getting kind of cold out there. But, hey, you know, homeless people are not allowed to go into parking garages. And they have, of course, no shelter and no right to put up a tent in the Santa Cruz area. Want to know why? Ask Mayor Ryan Coonerty, 420-5020, 420-5020. Now, down Venice Beach is where you're now currently located. I've heard some stories from Peggy Lee Kennedy and other activists down there that there's a concerted attack on RV dwellers. Is that true?
Well, you know, there's an attack against anybody that doesn't have a condo. And you know, they want to make every place like Carmel. You know, that's what they want. They want merchants. They want shopping. They want people with sandals trotting up. And that's why all their little parades, they're just sick. And these people, next year, you get ready because you guys are all going to lose everything that you got. I can't wait. Psychics and gambling casinos make more than everybody during Depression.
Now, let me ask you about this. Skid Row, you've been down there at all in Los Angeles?
You can't help it. It's right in the middle of downtown L.A. They got 30 billionaires living in L.A., and it's just sick. Those people go out of the sick.
50-square-block area.
Let's go over to Africa.
Wait a minute. 50-block-square-block area, this is important to me, where it's now, where at least for the last year and a half, it's been legal for homeless people to sleep at night under the Jones decision. But since there was a settlement, it's legal throughout Los Angeles to sleep. But then I heard about a week and a half ago that police are using 647J, a state anti-lodging law, to go after people anyway, ignoring the Jones settlement. Is
well,
that true?
They're also violating the Fourth Amendment by coming up to people that are homeless and searching them. Setting them up for crimes like, charging them with four times the penalty for something like, you know, like having cocaine.
Littering, dropping a bit of ash on the sidewalk.
Anything at all
yeah,
that they can run them in into jail on and put them in the system. And what they're doing is they push them out of L.A. and then they just run to all the outskirt towns, you know, anywhere where there's a beach and or where there's water.
Jason, I want to thank you for coming on the air here.
You're very welcome.
You're welcome to hang or go get some sleep as you wish.
Yeah, I need you to chill out.
And I'm gonna try to see what kind of crucial information the next perhaps guest or maybe his co-host, I'm not sure. Maybe he's taking over the show. It's hard to tell with this guy. He's going to be showing up. He is showing up shortly. He's here, actually. While I prepare for, you know, myself and prepare you for this new experience, let's return to, we're listening to the guy who held the police at bay for 8 hours at La Vie a year and a half ago. He was inside La Vie restaurant. That's not me applauding. That must be some questionable person in the background. I think that's the potential, our potential new talk show host or possibly cellmate. He might be my cellmate soon. Anyway, we're going to hear a little bit about this guy discussing things from his perspective. Although he admits he was high on meth, you know, he was not in the best shape. But this he'll give you his side of the story, which hitherto has not been told. Jason has one more thing to say.
Oh, yeah. Madison, by the way, like I said, if you want to come down and visit me at the headquarters tomorrow, I'd love to see you down there.
There you go, Madison. Special invite from preacher, Reverend Dr. Lubidu.
Look, I don't call you Goldberg or nothing like that. My name is world famous and classic, precious Reverend Doctor, the electronic and international galactic Jason. Some states
I thought it was
country.
Pastor Pascal.
Some states I'm also known as Commander.
Nobody calls you Shorty.
No, because I'm not short.
Good point. All right, now, anyway, call in if you want to talk to Jason or to me or to the mystery individual who will soon be a mystery no longer.
Can you tell us the actual reality of what was happening? What happened? You walked into...
I walked into...
Was it Le Buffet or La Vie? Probably La Vie.
It was La Vie. I walked into La Vie.
Uh-huh.
I went in. I looked for anybody that was around. Nobody was there. So I called. I actually looked on their schedule of workers, and I called their workers.
Why were you going in?
I just went in. I don't know why.
Just
out of the blue.
Looking for work, looking for shelter, just hanging out.
I was just hanging out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you went in.
Yeah, I went in. I trespassed. And
was
I went
it
in.
Closed or?
It was open. The door was open. That's
that wouldn't be trespass, would it?
No.
I mean, was it after? What time was it?
It was 6.
In the morning or evening?
6 in the morning.
So it probably was closed.
Yeah.
So you walked in.
Yeah, and I called somebody. I was basically trying to get some food. I was kind of hungry.
Called on the phone somebody or?
No, I was calling. I said, "Hey, is anybody here? Is
okay.
anybody here?"
Nobody
I got was there. Nobody was there. So I went in and took a shower. There was a shower there. I took a shower and I started calling people that worked there.
On the phone?
Yeah, on the phone. And nobody wanted to come in. Nobody came in.
Did you know people from before at Lovey? Or?
Yeah.
And how did that happen?
I know Bob. Noxious. He plays guitar for Late
Buffet or from La Vie?
E3 Playhouse.
All right.
See, at that time, E3 Playhouse, Club La Vie, and we're all combined into one.
Right. They all use the same general open area anyway.
Yeah.
And they all use the same bathroom, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least two of them did.
Yeah.
Two of them did. So let me ask you, you went there at 6. At what point... did you cause any property damage?
No.
When did your presence there attract the notice of authority?
I guess whenever the dishwasher guy got there.
What happened then? What did he say to you? What was the interaction?
He just left. I kind of shocked him. Whenever he came in, he didn't speak English. So I guess I shocked him.
Were you prancing around naked, breaking dishes? Were you sitting down, reading a book? Were you walking about?
I was waiting for somebody to get there that worked there.
Okay, and once somebody had gotten there, what was your ideal scenario? What did you want to happen?
Well, the cops came.
Right, but you didn't want that to happen. What would you have preferred to happen? You're waiting for somebody, so...
If I could turn back hands of time, I wish I could just have... not even went in there.
I understand. But once you went in there, let's suppose you had your ideal wish. What would you wish them to do? What were you hoping for them to do?
For their workers to be on time.
And once they were on time, what would you have gotten out of that?
I would have left.
Well, why did you want? I mean, were you waiting for something, or were you looking for? You said you were looking for food.
Yeah.
Or were you just? I mean, it sounds like a little unsure about what you were doing.
Well, I was on drugs too.
What drugs were you on?
Oh, meth, amphetamines.
I see. You were speeding around.
Oh, indefinitely.
So anyway, the guy came in, he got scared. Did you say something that scared him?
No, I didn't say anything to him.
So he left, and then what happened?
I seen cops started coming outside. They called the phone. At that point, they said that I would be arrested for trespass. I said, well, I'm not coming out. So I'm going to have to come in and get me. And
did you brandish a butter knife? What happened then?
Well, at that point, I told them, well, there's more than just me in there. I told them there were 4 or 5 other people in here, and we've got the place. We want a ransom. I started telling them all kinds of things, that I wanted some money, and I wanted...
But just the drugs talking. Are you a major ransom man?
This is really the drugs we're talking about.
Okay, so then what happened?
At that point, I drank a beer. I ate a piece of pie. The cops said, come out. We just want to talk. They started calling me on the telephone. So I broke the phone, so they would stop calling. I started putting, I got a bomb, signs on the, and then news people came out. Whenever the news people came out, I started just putting on a big show for them. And that was basically what happened. And then the cops blew it out of proportion, and after it got blown out of proportion,
did you ever offer any violence to the police?
Sir?
Were the police violent toward you or vice versa?
I ended up getting tased.
How many times?
Twice.
And tell me about how that felt.
I pissed my pants the first time, and the second time, I really didn't deserve it.
had that thing beaten down.
What had happened the first time?
The first time, well, the cop Hoppy.
Hoppy?
Yeah. I told him that I would come out. And I was coming out, and as I was coming out, he tasered me in the neck.
And then, after you were tasered in the neck, did you fall down?
Fell down, pissed my pants, and then they tasered me again.
Same officer, or?
On the ground, I'm not sure.
And then what happened?
Then they brought me to the hospital. And then they brought me to jail, and then for some reason they brought me back from jail back to the hospital. And then from the hospital back to jail, I spent 6 months in jail pleading no guilty to burglary, vandalism, just a few different felonies, and then I just kept pleading not guilty, not guilty, not guilty.
Who was your attorney?
J.P. Morell. J.P. Well, I fired him. I fired them all, and then Kristen Carter was my final.
What was Kristen Carter?
She finally got me out of there.
What was your? Did you plead to anything, or did you just?
I pled to trespassing.
And what kind of a sentence did they give you?
And that's interesting because we just heard that Jason Pascal fired Kristen Carter, so apparently different folks had different results with her.
Yeah, time served.
Any probation?
No.
Not even court probation?
Nope.
When did you get released?
In May.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Since May, have you been sleeping out?
Every night.
And how would you say the...
Well, actually, I'm sorry for that that plea bargain. They told me that I had to leave Santa Cruz forever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So are you here illegally? Or
no. I don't know why, but they said that it's okay to be back for some unknown
reason. The police said this.
Yeah, the police said it.
But part of the plea bargain, you agreed... Well, I don't think they can banish you from Santa Cruz. That would be an illegal plea bargain, I would
First, they banned me from Pacific Avenue and Front Street for doing the Club La Vie thing.
Right.
And then then they let me out, and I got into a little bit more trouble.
What sort?
Misdemeanor, whatever it was.
You're talking trespass, burglary?
I think drunk in public.
Drunk in public?
Yeah, so they just told me to stay off Pacific Avenue. They put an order on me, and then supposedly they passed the law on homeless people being able to hang out downtown. None of my friends are allowed downtown anymore, but I think it's changing.
So have you been told you're not allowed to hang out? Are you still banned from Pacific Avenue?
No, I'm not.
And so you go there freely?
Yep.
My mother finds out.
Getting back to the original subject, we've been talking again with
Chris Carter.
And Chris, you've gotten sleeping tickets at all? You say you've been awakened, but you say you haven't gotten any tickets recently?
Yeah, I don't get tickets really. They just wake me up.
Police choose not to give you tickets, or what's the reason you don't get tickets?
I don't know. Maybe because I'm kind of polite. I get up. Really, before I kind of sleep with one eye open, so it's kind of like before they get to wake me up, I'm already up and leaving.
You're a light sleeper.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Chris. If you want any of this literature, grab it. This will be played on free radio probably Thursday night or Sunday morning. I'd give you my card if you want.
All right, Santa Cruz.
Sounds good. We're talking with, what's your name?
People, my name is Hugh Montgomery.
And you, I think did we talk before?
I don't know if we have or not. Yeah, I believe we did talk before.
At the Thanksgiving meal prep?
Yes, sir.
Anything new happened since then?
Just the same old song and dance.
Like, you know? Give me the details.
There's a rat on a treadmill. Run from pillar to post, point A to point B to point C, you know?
Any particular tickets since then? Or?
Yeah. Well, actually, I still have the same. I just got into the system, so I'm going to court tomorrow to take care of it.
And these tickets are for?
One is for camping. I had an abscess tooth, so I'm guilty. You know, I got a little pint of vodka to kill the pain, which is true. And
it comes to camping, I think.
Yeah.
Camping here.
Yes.
And this is, looks like, maybe open container.
Yeah.
Hugh Montgomery.
Yeah, and I was up in a den of poison ivy when that transpired, in a clean camp, no fires, no trash, by myself, no music, nothing, just sitting there in this den of poison oak, and they tromped right in there and gave me these tickets, flat in my tent, told me to start stepping, and it was getting dark at the time.
Who were the people involved?
It was the park rangers, namely
John Wallace.
John Wallace, you got it.
Anybody else with him?
No, not that I saw.
Did he have a gun?
I don't know if he did or not. He was dressed in black. He scared the bejesus out of me because I didn't know. You know, he looked like he was a SWAT team member, the way he was dressed, you know. And it just kind of startled me, like, what is this, you know?
Did he give you a legal place to go to sleep or camp?
No, he didn't even suggest one. He just told me to get my stuff and get moving.
Did you have a messy camp?
No, I didn't. It was a clean camp. What I carry in, I carry out.
And about what time did this happen?
Approximately about 7-ish.
What day?
It was the beginning of June, last June. Yeah, and I just now recently got into the system. They told me to call every 2 weeks, so I've got this burden on me. I call the court every 2 weeks. Am I in the system? I want to resolve this. Well, no, you're not in. Call back in 2 more weeks. I said, well, look, I don't want to be surprised with a bench warrant. I want to just take care of it. And it's been since June, and now all this time I'm finally in, you know, I'm in the system now. So anyway, tomorrow I'm going to court to try to take care of this.
You're interested in being a plaintiff against the city in the sleeping ban lawsuit?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Cool.
With all my heart. Because I tell you, this is not the America I grew up in. This is wrong. This is wrong.
Thank you, Hugh.
You're welcome.
So we have the good side of the camping scene. We're talking with Anonymous. He's out of here. With Shannon
but
out
I
here.
Can't, like the second.
Can't talk about you. You got a child on your hand there.
Yeah.
We're talking with David Turner, who's been fighting for years on numerous issues that affect homeless people. Recently, you have some concerns about HUD.
Yes, HUD is the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and their application process is dilatory. And by the time they get to the homeless people, they either change their address or telephone number, and which they only frequently on Saturdays and
HUD
some
changes his address and phone number, or the homeless people do.
The homeless people do.
Right, right.
And so HUD will only take inbound calls on certain days. Then the interviews are scheduled for outbound call interviews. And that is if you're out of county, et cetera, et cetera. So,
a frustrating process for a homeless person.
Well, it can't be done by the average homeless person. It has no legal concept of it's only designed for people that want to live off of it. Thank you.
Thank you. We're talking with
Stephen Collins.
Stephen, you got a ticket from Ranger Wallace?
That's correct.
And when was this?
Well, it was about 2 months ago.
And where were you?
I was camping in the Poconkeepsie.
Alone or in company?
Alone.
Did you have a messy campsite?
No.
Feces,
no.
Needles strewn all
absolutely
over?
Absolutely clean, and they know that I clean up campsites even when they're not my own. They know I do this, but they still ticketed me anyway.
You only got one ticket.
Actually, I've had four.
In the course of?
2 years.
2 years.
You're Stephen Wallace?
I'm Stephen Collins.
Collins. Okay. Yeah. And how old are you?
55.
55. Any disabilities?
I'm disabled. I'm on Social Security. I have bipolar and post-traumatic stress disorder.
How long have you been in the area?
2.5 years now.
And what brought you to Santa Cruz, aside from the wonderful John Wallace?
I know that the people are good here, and it's a good place to be. It's good. It's just a good city with good people in it.
And you have relatives here, or what?
I don't, but I've just been drawn here. Santa Cruz is home to me, and it's.
You got a camping ticket?
Where are you from?
I lived in San Jose for 26 years. I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, and what have you done with this ticket? Did you get a note from the homeless service center saying there was no shelter and take it to the court?
I haven't dealt with the ticket yet.
You're under arrest, officer.
No, it's part of my illness is inability to deal with simple things like this. It's part of the symptoms of my illness. So it's hard for me to deal with these.
When you got the ticket, were you offered a place to stay, like a shelter?
Not at all.
Are you tonight? Are you waiting to go on a shelter bus?
No, I'm going back up to the camp.
Same place as before.
Mm-hmm. Pretty close. Yeah.
Well, can Ranger Wallace find you there and destroy your tent if possible?
Yes, he would.
Now, have you ever had any of your property taken or destroyed?
I've had property taken
by
Ranger Wallace.
How do you know it was Ranger Wallace?
Because he was the one who
He was the one who left a note saying that he took my property.
He did leave a note. What did the note say?
That he had taken my property because it was a stove and a lantern and not allowed. And
did he leave you a receipt for it?
No, he didn't.
So he just stole your property?
Basically, yes.
Did he destroy it? Did he say it was stored anywhere?
He said it's at the police department, but when I went down there, they had no record of anything like that.
Shame on you, Ranger Wallace.
It was $150 worth of equipment. I understood I would have liked to got it back, or at least something more than just, it's down at the police department. I went to get it. They had no record of it.
Okay. Thank you. We've been talking with
Stephen Collins. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. You say you have the radio show called State of Mind?
State of Mind. Every 1080 KSCO every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock.
And runs from 7 to 8?
That's correct.
About M.H. Can?
It's about M.H. Can is the one that's, puts the show on.
That's a group of, are we talking about mostly victims of the psychiatric system or people who love drugs but want them,
We all have mental health diagnoses and we peer support each other. It's basically a peer-run self-help kind of a system.
For those who are both on medication and those who aren't?
That's right.
Excellent. And how can people get involved with this?
They can call the radio station there.
KSCO between
KSCO. Yes, 1080. I don't know the number.
It's 479-1080.
That's right. And they can help with that. Or they can call MH Can directly.
You know the number?
I don't.
No problem. Thank you. And we're down here as El Fresco's closes down. Sue is strumming away in a sidewalk devoid of other people watching. But it's loud and it's a little harsh. But there you are. So we're here at the SAFE event on Tuesday night, almost 7 o'clock. Valerie Christie, Vision Song Valerie, as some have called her, strumming along on her guitar. However, the most of the crowd, she's near the New Leaf Alfresco's area, but down the way at Cafe Campesina, looks like a relatively large crowd of lingerers, loiterers, and associators associating. But this music is here, and we'll listen to a little of it if it happens to be played. Police, I'm going to go investigate. Police have arrived. Just passing on through. How's it going? Good. And officer actually just walked through the crowd and moved on.
And that was the SAFE Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression New Leaf Tuesday meal with Vision Song Valerie Christie out there feeding and strumming. The police passed by, and apparently all was mellow, but there were some arrests, and I don't have the details yet. There has been a rather rough-hewn crew hanging out there, some might say hardcore alcoholics in some respects, mixing with dual diagnosis folks, ordinary folks on the street, musicians. And as far as I'm concerned, as long as folks are not blocking the sidewalk, being abusive to other people, or drunk in public, and by that I don't mean that they have an open container, which I think is just fine, regardless of the bogus rules that are being used to say that you can have a cup of wine from Chianti's, but don't carry your beer in a paper bag. And we, of course, still in the studio, lingering and waiting for a ride, is Jason Pascal. Has some comments. I also have in the studio with me Matt Marks. Matt is actually the author of an article we've had posted on the wall here for about a year. He was formerly a Cabrillo College student who was one of the students who actually came down on his own initiative to City Hall about a year and a half ago to oppose the parking lot panic law, which then kind of got shrunk to the parking garage paranoia law, but has expanded again to the parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to go into a parking lot unless you have a vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes before moving right along. You can, and there's all the exceptions. You can walk straight through if you just keep walking. I, of course, and I urge everyone else to ignore this at all possible occasions, socialize, hang out, and when the police come and stare at you, stare back. I've actually heard of disabled people being harassed by the police for hanging out in the parking lot, sitting in their vehicle. Tenderfoot Tim Rumford talked to me about this. He's the author of the Humanity for Homeless blogspot. Good website, by the way, which is one of the few local homeless websites that's actually kept up to date. It's called, again, humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com. Matt, you've disappeared from town. Last we heard, you were harassing the Scotts Valley Sheriff John Weiss when they were talking about a camping law up there. And then I hear you're wandering around Berkeley. What are you trying to bring back the 60s? What's going on?
Yeah, Berkeley definitely needs a. I would say Berkeley definitely needs to bring back the 60s over there. The Berkeley community does a much better job of staying true to that than the student population. I just recently moved up from Santa Cruz to San Francisco, where I am staying in many, many different places.
Are you squatting?
I don't know what the definition of squatting is.
Couch surfing, perhaps.
Couch surfing, park surfing, sidewalk surfing, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are you doing up in San Francisco, or dare I ask?
Well, I mean, I went up there. I wanted to live in San Francisco because, you know, I've never lived in a big city, and I'm going to school at UC Berkeley right now, and I've recently become involved in the tree sit going on campus up at UC Berkeley, so I'm pretty much spending most of my time over on that end of the bay.
The tree sit up there is what, to save trees from athletic field destruction, plan?
I mean, yeah, down to the simple nitty-gritty, there, the UC wants to build an athletic training facility for only athletes. They want to put it in this one specific spot for multiple reasons that maybe we'll be able to get into. The one spot that they want to put it happens to be one of the more beautiful places on campus. It's a grove of oak trees. There's a redwood tree in there. There's a couple different kinds of trees in there. A large, you know, green public space, one of few still remaining. It was, you know, when they built the football stadium, is actually right there. When they built the stadium, they said that they were going to keep certain, you know, okay, we're going to build this stadium, we're going to eliminate a bunch of your green space, but, you know, we're going to leave some for you. And then, you know, 80 years go by and they're going to take that, and that pace is only accelerating. It happens to be a World War I veteran memorial. The trees were planted in remembrance of soldiers that died. It also, way more importantly...
Spare me about the soldiers that died.
That's
real.
We're talking
about the soldiers
that
killed. The soldiers that killed, right?
Good point. It is a native burial ground.
We know the Germans invaded the United States in World War I, right? We saw them bombing San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that one.
But more importantly...
It's like the Iraqis are invading, Santa Cruz. That's why we have to have great, respect for all the dead killers who've been sent over there occupying the country in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. So, more importantly to us, is it's a native burial ground. When they built the stadium there, it's come out through this tree sit that they discovered 18 remains, or, you know, more specifically, bones of native people. So
you have a number of reasons why you're defending this particular area from athletic expansion. Let me move to something that's a little more important to me, I know, but not necessarily to you. The Public Commons for All But the Homeless initiative that recently, essentially got passed in part by Tom Bates, the mayor of Berkeley.
Mm.
He's the one. This is an initiative which it expands no smoking areas, but it also expands things like places where people are allowed to lie down if you're poor or homeless, which is probably the only time you would want to lie down unless you're doing some kind of other activity where you actually need to use a public space. And then there's the Being driven away from sitting, sleeping, or lying, some such thing. Used to be you needed two warnings and one complaint. Now you don't need, you need one warning and no complaints, I think, is the new rule.
Yep.
Did all the those wonderful tree sitters show up at the hearing and oppose this thing? Did you show up there?
I would like, I did not show up there. I couldn't be there that
too
one
day. Too busy defending
day,
the trees.
That one day I was actually in San Francisco. I talked, you know, a ton of people. I understand where you're going with this. The tree sit, you know, there's a ton of people involved in the tree sit that were there, you know, and the main, you know, force behind the people at city council advocating against these laws going through, you know as well as I do.
Really?
There's not a huge presence all the time at city council when these laws are being passed, but mm-hmm. the people that were there are definitely, you know, involved in the tree sit as well. The tree sit, it has gone way past, you know, those trees. And those trees, I think, are, and that spot is extremely important, but there's, you know, this is about, this is about way bigger stuff. You know, people at the tree sit are getting harassed constantly, and the main people that are getting harassed at the tree sit are us homeless people that are actually there when all the fucking students, all the video cameras are gone. That's when.
And what's happening with the student community? Are they, I mean, are they fighting against the war, you know, the criminal occupation of Iraq? Are they fighting the criminal drug prohibition war? Are they fighting the, you know, the for the legalized torture, which is now the rule at not just at Guantanamo, but probably in the Berkeley jail, for all I know, with tasering and other effects?
The students are studying it.
They're studying it.
They're dissecting it, and they're writing theses on it. Well, you know, Mario, I don't even know his name.
Mario Savio.
Yeah,
he's dead, right?
Yeah, he's dead. And, you know, there's plaques all over campus for him and for free speech zones and for, you know, these things that Berkeley's fought for in the past. And yet, you know, in the middle of Sproul Hall, you may have classes going on where we're discussing freedoms.
Well,
didn't
John
Yoo,
Berkeley professor who was behind the torture memo in 2002,
yeah,
recommending that, you know, unless it involves, you know, destruction of bodily limbs or, you know, death, it's not really torture. Let's call it, you know, tough love.
The University of California at Berkeley has been responsible for every single, you know, or I don't know about every single, but the atomic bomb. I mean, you know, there's animal torture labs on campus. You know, the University of California is not...
Experimentation labs. We've got to have cosmetics with a proper amount of...
Guantanamo could probably be called an experimentation and interrogation method lab, not a torture chamber.
It's an experiment in human understanding. I mean, as Alan Dershowitz puts it, if we have a ticking bomb, we have to be able to use the old bamboo chutes. You know, get yourself a torture warrant, as Alan would say.
Yeah, they make the ticking bomb.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, we can't be too sure that nuclear weapons aren't on the way for mm-hmm. Abu Dhabi.
One of the things that's interesting that you bring up about, and I think this is relevant to Santa Cruz, too, and it's interesting, I didn't see it as much when I was living in Santa Cruz because I was going to community college, but, you know, there's a huge difference between the way that the police will treat students. If students come up, students can do whatever they want at the tree sit. And they're not going
to
get arrested.
Have you been to the tree sit here in Santa Cruz?
I haven't. That's actually one of the reasons I came down. I'm going to go up there
tomorrow.
Perhaps
you can give us your analysis of that when you do it.
I will. I've heard...
We can't get the students to do shit downtown. Unlike, let's say, a year or two ago, when a few of them came to oppose this parking lot, this destruction of public space. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I'm all for saving the trees on campus, but what about saving the rights of people to use public spaces downtown? Well,
yeah.
I guess not so important.
And I mean, I don't think students really understand I don't think students identify as much with people from Iraq, people living on the street, people with, you know, darker skin hues. And it's interesting. That is, you know, one of the things I'm very involved in the tree sit, and that is something that I'm super interested in.
Well, interesting.
Why do we congregate over this?
I mean, will there be a bunch of people showing up on a Saturday at noon at the Capitola recruiting station? There is a protest that's going to be happening from 12 to 2 for people who... want to express their concerns about the Christmas killings that are going on in Iraq. You know, the compliments of the U.S. Army and the U.S. Marines and the U.S. other services, as well as, of course, Blackwater and all the other private security forces over there, as well as, of course, all the paid U.S. proxies in the Iraqi government who are engaging in their own activities. So this will be happening from 12 to 2. For those who are interested, you can check out whether you think you want to, weigh in at the Capitola recruiting station. I've been reading a book called Power on the Left, about the development of radical, I guess radical in quotes, movements in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s in the United States. And it's interesting to read how the struggle against the war in Vietnam and the civil rights struggles converged, and a broader kind of critique of American society came up, which involved not just sitting in the university, you know, writing papers a la Angela Davis 2005, but, you know, actually doing something a la Angela Davis 1969, you know, which was a little different, you know. So what's happening
now? You know,
now
another argument there is that they came together and converged. You could say that the anti-war movement, you know, almost came in and distracted. I mean, yes, you know, Vietnam was an extremely important thing, but then all of a sudden we're getting people out of Vietnam, and it's like, oh, we won. It's like, we didn't win shit. And I mean, depending on who we is, but, you know, I would say the civil rights movement got derailed. And the civil rights movement did not get derailed, but the civil rights movement, they focused, you know, they took students, and white people got all excited through that activism, and it got transferred on to Vietnam and getting people out of Vietnam. And we didn't get people out of Vietnam. They got people out of Vietnam. As soon as they were ready.
The Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese got the people out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
Got the troops out of Vietnam.
You also have the fact that, you know, then you have these left-leaning feminist women that came into our community and said, oh, you black women, you don't need your black men. Remember Alice Walker and, you know, The Color Purple and stuff like that.
We have a caller who's joining
really
us.
Really screwed up our community.
Caller,
hi, Robert. It's Madison.
Madison,
I'm
call number three.
My family, we actually experienced what happened in Berkeley, and this kid has it wrong. I know Mario Savio. I met him when I was little. My father went and met with Mario Savio when the civil rights thing was
Wait a minute, Madison. Before we start throwing the names around, what do you think he's wrong about?
Well, I'm telling him what happened in Berkeley, what was going on.
Well, we all know what happened in Berkeley. The question is, he's saying that the spirit of Mario Savio, even though there are all these plaques all over the place, is either dead or buried. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah, I totally want to hear what you have to say, but I'd like to say, I think Mario Savio, I would love it if Mario Savio was here. I would love it if we were doing anything close to what he was doing. So, I mean, obviously that didn't come across clear. I think students nowadays... there's a lack of that. Mario Savio, you know, I'm not very up on his stuff, but it seems like I would love that if I saw anybody.
Be into civil rights and not know Mario Savio's work.
Well, I mean, I know him. I don't want to say anything on the radio in depth about him. I do know, you know. Yes, I'm familiar with his work.
So so I think Madison, you may have misunderstood what Matt here was saying. What's that?
Well, he's the '60s founder of it, at least for the white culture.
Well, no, he's one of many, actually. I mean, not to mention, you know...
Yeah, but he came out of the West Coast. The East Coast always follows the West Coast. We're always 2 years ahead.
We're really talking about Berkeley 2007 going on.
No, I'm talking about Berkeley 67.
Well, good. That's nice. I'd like to focus 65. Back on the present, though. That's what we're really talking about.
Well, this kid is wrong. There was civil rights. There was about a 6 month to 18 month gap. Then Cal blew. And Mario was kind of the transition point there, and he was exhausted. And as the parents got involved, my father was one of the first, he went and met with Savio and said, basically he was a nobody in the back with a bunch of paint cans, and he said, well, what's going on with the kids, Mario, if you're leading this newspaper and you're being a leader and this and that? He says, I got my girlfriend pregnant, I got to go. So the whole thing was,
Madison,
you know,
what are we talking about here? You know, the personalities are not important. The issues are what's important here. And what we're talking about is, how do we mobilize people now to take the kind of stance that will remove us from criminal war in Iraq and also take some action in dealing with the kind of racial disparities that are commonplace
in Santa Cruz. I think they need a draft card because these kids are latent, spoiled little wild Indians who can't spell. And they take everything for granted, like mommy's going to wipe their butt for the rest of their lives. They don't have any initiative, and they've never had to put their lives on the line for anything.
Well, no. What are we going to do, big girl? Not what are they going to do. What are we going to do?
Well, I want them to have the draft card.
Aside from sit around and go yap, yap, yap like you and I do on the radio. What else are we going
to
do?
I write letters to senators. I call senators.
Write letters to senators.
I'm in touch with Hillary Clinton at least once a day, and several
write
mayors.
Letters to Hillary Clinton. Okay. I think that's, frankly, I think that's complete co-option and a dead end. But if you get somewhere with that, I'd like to hear about
it. You have to make the system work for you.
No.
If you bail
I
out
disagree.
And say, okay, I'm
disagree.
Out.
Making the system work for you is exactly what you means making. If the system can't work, it can't work for all those people who are in jail and crack cocaine discrepancies. It can't work for homeless people in Santa Cruz. So making the system work for you is a way of avoiding all the real issues that face most people who are poor. That's the point.
Well,
I don't think
well,
I get
it. I came up with three programs this week for San Francisco for the poor. Program ideas. What did you come up with?
Program ideas?
Yeah, you need program ideas in order to
you
to
somehow
move
have some idea.
No,
I think you have some naive notion, Madison, that if you give a program idea to some clown pretender like the Giuliani backer Newsom, you're going to get somewhere in terms of restoring rights and services for homeless people, which I think is preposterous.
And the institution is going to crash too. So you're trying to put money into another institution that will crash.
Well, the whole thing's about to crash all over the globe. It's that they want to start World War III.
Well, you realize women purchase 80% of all products in America? Maybe women should stop shopping.
Who says?
I work a lot with women. I have a business. I've been homeless. I started mine with $100. I never took any subsistence anywhere.
I don't want to hear your credentials, Madison. I want to hear specifics as to what either I want to hear news updates from here, or I'd like to hear some proposals you're making about something specific that we can do here. That's what I want to hear. Okay. And it's true, I'm not the kindest talk show host here, but hey, that's me. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, I don't know. I was gonna take it back. I thought what Jason was saying earlier was interesting about just sort of like police. I mean, you definitely police brutality and just the way that the cops are working in general. And I think it's, you know, from our perspective up in Berkeley right now, you know, this is their strategy. They come, they take anything they want. You know, if a security guard says something, if a football fan says something, boom, they'll make a citizen's arrest. Whereas if we have a tree sitter or anyone involved with those people get poked in the eye by a police by a football fan on his way to the game, you know, we make a complaint and that's laughed off. So, you know, in Jason's case, certain people, you know, they happen to be white and are there to shop, so otherwise they're financially contributing. They say something, and their voice is carrying more weight. You know, the police are there to do whatever those people want.
And selective enforcement in Santa Cruz is traditional.
Yeah, and I think everywhere.
Look how they get drunk every night down at the local bar, and they get in their cars at exactly the same time. Some of the bars close, one or two. The cops know exactly how many people are coming out of the bar, and they somehow get in their cars and drive off. And, you know, you can blame old good old Rosie McCann's and all those other places that support these college kids so that they can have their drunk lascivious.
Well, until I see what the stats are in terms of the number of people who are arrested, I can't, you know, vouch for that one way or the other. But I suspect there may be some truth about it. I don't know. We have a caller, and one hopes that this might be a new caller. Wouldn't that be kind of a refreshing change? Hi there, you're on free radio.
Robert, it's Uncle Dennis.
Hey, Uncle Dennis, what's cooking?
I just want to make sure you got my message.
Well, let me, why don't you were going to suggest actually that you're going to be coming in late, but why don't you, to be sure that I have your message, I think I do, I'm going to take a second look at the, Uncle Dennis does a great show after my show. Actually, I assume it's a great show. I don't listen to it that much, Dennis, but I hear the beginning of it. Let's put it this way.
It's a great guy.
You want a particular program put on because you're coming in late. And let's tell the entire community what it is you want.
The Boys Show.
The Boys Show, and that's under Uncle Dennis, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'll do that.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Uncle Dennis. And that's going to be coming up at 8 o'clock, yes, it's the Boys Show, which is part of Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, but who knows. I could be. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me is Jason Pascal, renowned and infamous astrological hustler and with him is expatriate. There it is. Expatriate renegade from Cabrillo College, now parked in a tree somewhere, or at least supporting tree sitters in Berkeley.
Don't keep calling me a hustler, by the way. I'm not calling you a small-town radio show operator.
I am a small-town radio show
operator.
I'm
not over here making fun of you.
Come on,
give me a break.
I'm not trying to make fun of the truth. We have nothing but truth. Truth here in this studio.
Robert, this is, you sound like left-wing Bill O'Reilly. Truth in this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Truthishness. Yes, it's a truthy-woothy. Let's pause here briefly for breath, mainly for me, but also I want to play a few more interviews. I'm hoping that we'll have a visit from John Golder, also known as Yon Golder, and Linda LeMaster, formerly head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, who is fighting, well, to get her car back from the parking authority. We did a long segment on this about a week ago where we showed that there's some real serious concerns that the city of Santa Cruz is not allowing people to have proper impoundment hearings on their vehicles when that impoundment happens. I'm not necessarily suggesting a racket with the North County Tow or anything of that sort. Certainly not. Nothing could be further from the truth. But there seems to be, there is no record yet we've found of any kind of impoundment hearings ever having been allowed, although they're provided for by state law and apparently happen in other counties like Napa County. And I don't have all the facts in front of me. Golder is the reference man on this. He may be coming in to talk about it later. And if he does, we'll be doing that. Until then, however, let's turn to some street interviews while I check my notes. And you've just been given a flyer, well, you've had it in your pocket for a while, about the move to boycott the bookshop Santa Cruz because of their support for the sleeping ban. What is your feeling about that?
They support the sleeping ban?
The owner of the store supports the sleeping ban, Neil Coonerty, and the main worker, Ryan Coonerty, is about to be mayor, so he also supports the sleeping ban.
Oh, no!
Oh, yes.
What exactly is the sleeping ban?
It is a law in the municipal code that makes it illegal to sleep at night after 11 o'clock if you're outside or in a vehicle.
I don't think that's right at all. I really don't, especially not for the streets of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, Santa Cruz.
A lot of people live on these streets. Or what if you're just out really late and you pass out drinking and you want to just take a nap on the sidewalk?
Or in your car? I mean, if you're drunk and you leave your bar or whatever and you can't drive home and you just decide to sleep in your car, I mean, what are you going to do then? You get a ticket for not driving drunk? I mean, what's that all about? Honestly.
Well, I'll pretend I'm Ryan Coonerty answering you, okay? I'll pretend I'm the fellow who supports the sleeping ban. I'd say, well, the police don't enforce it that way. They only enforce it against where there are problems, where people who are homeless are gathering, where it's, there's a complaint. That's the only time we ever enforce it. People are discreet. We don't bother them.
So they're not going to let them sleep together? They have to sleep away from each other? They can't join, like, a community sort of?
Well, if people are sleeping downtown or they're sleeping in places where they're creating a problem, then we arrest them and send the police, and they get a citation, and there are about 60 to 80 of such tickets a month.
They arrest them?
They give them citations, and if they don't pay them, it is possible they'll go to warrant and get some kind of a arrest at some point in the future.
But how is somebody who can't even get a job for themselves supposed to be able to afford something like that?
Well, it's if they want, later on, they can walk all the way over to the homeless service center, get a letter, walk to the court, stand in line, go to the judge, and ask if the ticket be dismissed, and it usually is.
All for a simple nap on the street.
Well, Santa Cruz is not an easy place to live, and it requires a certain amount of money. You see, I mean, businesses down here do a lot of business. They have to pay rent. This is a pretty high-cost property. We can't have every Tom, Dick, and Jane parking their butts on the street.
And that's a good point, too. People come here to spend money and shop. Like, we don't need to have to walk over someone sleeping.
Exactly.
There's a park for them to sleep in. There's, like, somewhere that's less...
They're not allowed to sleep in cars. That's...
Parks?
Oh, park. No, that's not allowed either.
What? I can understand not letting them sleep downtown. I can understand that. But if it's somewhere discreet, like a park or something, why not?
But that doesn't really...
Parks are closed at night. I'm sorry.
I had no idea.
That doesn't make any sense, though, that they can't sleep on the street at night because nobody's shopping at night. Nobody's shopping at night.
Yes, but people might feel insecure the next day, or possibly there might be a mess that was made.
It's a tricky one. That's a tricky one.
That is tricky.
The whole situation's pretty tricky. Because I guess it's
They should make it more convenient at the shelters. So they should make it easier for them to, you know.
Well, there is shelter night for 160 people, and there are only 1,500 to 2,000 out there. So.
That's too small. They should have more than that, especially out here.
Or maybe if instead of giving them a ticket, why not make them do community service or have them go take a job?
That's a good idea.
Have a solution to these people sleeping on the street because they obviously don't have homes, so they don't have anywhere else to go.
If we let people sleep here, everybody would come to Santa Cruz and sleep all over the streets. That's one of the arguments they use.
But see, you give them community service, and they might not want to work. So that might scare some of them from sleeping on the street.
Well, so you favor... Well, that's often what happens. You can get community service if you get a sleeping ban ticket. You just have to go through the courts, and you have to stand in line, and you have to do what you have to do. So it sounds like you agree with me that it's okay for there to be a sleeping ban, provided that people can do community service. So for every night they sleep, that's 8 hours of community service they have to do. Because
that works. I mean, because if you're going to get them a ticket, it's going to be pointless. I wouldn't pay for the ticket if I had no home. If I'm sleeping on the street, I don't have the money for a place to stay. So
that means the taxpayers should have to pay for someone to be housed in jail because they can't sleep. But if they can't sleep, how can they be vibrant enough to do some community service? So the taxpayers have to pay for these people to stay in jail because they were sleeping. So I don't quite understand.
I was telling them that you usually don't go to jail for sleeping. You get a citation and you... They can ruin your credit. What they usually do, if you don't pay off the $97 ticket, which becomes a $397 ticket, which then goes south and becomes a $797 ticket with the additional $300 fine, then, you know, it goes on your credit record.
Yeah.
But if you're homeless, what does that matter?
Exactly.
Who cares about your credit? I mean, heck. I mean, after all. So, actually, we're doing these homeless people a kindness by giving them tickets, you see.
Oh, what?
I'm trying to be a good mayor here. I'm the mayor of the city. You are I'm the owner of the bookshop. I mean, I'm the chief worker, Ryan Coonerty. I'm trying to tell you why we're doing this. I'm pretending. I'm not really Ryan Coonerty. I mean, I may look like
it. Are you for the band or against it?
I'm against it.
What are your thoughts?
But Ryan is for it. So I'm like, because I'm Ryan, I have to say I'm for it.
But as you personally, not being Ryan, like,
no,
in
I'm
real
not Ryan.
Life. I know.
In
that.
Real life, I'm Robert, not Ryan.
Nice to meet you, Robert.
How do you do?
Hi.
But what, I mean, if they sleep on the street, like, do you think it's okay? Just let them pass out? Right there or in front of the shop?
Well, let me put it this way. I think that we need affordable housing for everybody and decent jobs, but until the day, that glorious trumpet day when the jubilee is sounded, I don't think people should be arrested for sleeping.
No. And there are so many jobs out here that take, you know, you don't have to have a degree to have these jobs. You know, you could work pretty much anywhere if you wanted to. All you need is the opportunity to, like, clean yourself up and get an interview, you know?
And is this not a free country as well? Why can't they sleep here?
Santa Cruz, it's $87 a night for a hotel room. Keep that in mind.
I believe it. But we're on the coast. Like, it's understandable. All the coast of California is expensive. A lot of people that are close to me move from California.
You can't pay, play. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
And a bit of reality here. Jason here is paying 65 plus 50 deposit for... You can have a personal interview with Jason if you go to, and that's we're going to keep that in confidence. Anyway, a little bit more of this. Actually, I think we may leave this. This is an interview in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. You can always join us. We do this protest every week. It's getting a little tiresome, actually, but there you are. In order to, should we say, give a wake-up call to Ryan Coonerty, who I believe, is still working in the bookshop Santa Cruz, though he sent us an email saying, I'm not going to be working in the bookshop after December. You're causing a lot of, you know, you're really increasing our business. So please stop, was what he said in his email to us, which is, you can kind of take that at face value and come to your own conclusions.
But see, they do play. Anyway, they don't pay and they play. And so that's why this guy's all
good. That's why we have to round them up and move them out of town. You know what I mean?
Move them out of town? That's,
oh, where are you going to put them?
But then that would take a piece of Santa Cruz away. The homeless help make Santa Cruz. This place is entertaining talking to the people who have no
nothing. You meet so many interesting people. Like, you have no idea what the background
is. I'm sorry, I'm too busy. I can't talk to you right now.
Exactly. That's right. Of course you can't talk about it.
We've been talking with...
Heather Cunningham.
And
Michelle Hawkins.
Thanks.
Who are you with?
We're talking with...
Deborah.
And...
Barbara.
You two were here earlier looking over this questionable end sleeping ban operation. What was your view?
Socially relevant.
Yes.
My view of the issues, you mean?
Yes, as well.
I think there's something that requires a lot of consideration and thoughtful discussion.
What do you think of this perspective from your associate here?
Noncommittal.
Noncommittal. Now,
she's being very noncommittal over here.
She's being noncommittal. But what is your view about the issue?
My view is that people need to have a better understanding of people and who they are as individuals, and maybe look for some solutions rather than being negative about things.
So in other words, sitting out here and ranting about poor Ryan Coonerty in the bookshop Santa Cruz is just completely foolish.
No, I think it's raising awareness, which is valuable.
You're going to have your not yet banned at the bookshop Santa Cruz sticker?
Sure.
Just how much awareness do you want to raise?
It'd be nice if...
Do I get a hug?
Sure, I'll give you a hug.
Thank you. What about you, big girl?
Oh, I'm game.
Stealing a kiss as well.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you.
And I think you're very visible.
Well, thank you.
Which is a good thing.
I'm out there with a lot of buttons and a bathrobe today.
Okay. Making a difference.
I'm just trying to make a kind of a provocative suggestion.
I saw earlier
suggestion.
The car with all the bumper stickers, too. I like that. Who belonged to that?
Well,
that
I'm connected with that, yes.
Yeah.
And we'll leave aside all this little ego-tripping stuff. Here's a little something from How Nonviolence Protects the State by Peter Gelderloos. I began reading this, guest last Sunday when I also do another edition of the show, and I'll be coming back at 9:30 on Sunday, the Sunday coming up, in 3 days. But I'll kind of repeat what I read before and kind of pick it up from there. We're talking about how whether nonviolence as a sole tactic is responsible for a lot of victories, or whether it has to be, you know, whether there should be numerous other things considered as well as nonviolence. Whether it's how deeply one should restrict oneself to nonviolence. And partisans of nonviolence are very militant about this in some respects. They'll put up monitors at protests to make sure that nobody strays from the guidelines of the protest. And that
snitches?
we like to call them monitors. Though, in fact, you know, it's often disturbances and, frankly, that create the kind of creative tension, if you will, that... ultimately result in the government's paying some attention to what the community wants. And we know that, you know, 65-70% of the country want the troops out of Iraq. We know that the Democratic House is now prepared to give Bush another appropriation for Iraq, even though it could simply refuse to do that. It could stop the war essentially by stopping the funding, but it's refusing to do that. And so it's defying the wishes of the American people. Now, obviously, it's a question of how much the American people want to make these wishes known, how much they give a shit, and how much we can do. And I'm afraid in the 60s, which we were talking about, that period of time, people seemed to give a shit more. Even in the 80s, they seemed to care more, and they seemed to put their activism into force in terms of numbers. But, We're in a time now where you have to deal with the time we're in now. Here's Peter Vanderloos, Gelderloos, writing from How Nonviolence Protects the State. A good case study regarding the efficacy of nonviolent protests can be seen in Spain's involvement with the U.S.-led occupation. Spain, with 1,300 troops, was one of the larger junior partners in the so-called Coalition of the Willing in Iraq. That is the U.S.-led invasion. More than 1 million Spaniards protested the invasion, and 80% of the Spanish population was opposed to it. But their commitment to peace ended there. They did actually nothing to prevent Spanish military support for the invasion and occupation. Because they remained passive and did nothing to disempower the leadership, they remained as powerless as the citizens of any, quote, democracy. Not only was Spanish Prime Minister Aznar able and allowed to go to war, he was expected by all forecasts to win re-election until the bombings. On March 11, 2004, just days before the voting booths opened, multiple bombs planted by an Al-Qaeda-linked cell exploded in Madrid train station, killing 191 people and injuring thousands more. Directly because of this, Aznar and his party lost in the polls, and the Socialists, the major party with an anti-war platform, were elected into power. The U.S. coalition shrunk with the loss of 1,300 Spanish troops and promptly shrunk again after the Dominican Republic and Honduras also pulled out their troops. Whereas millions of peaceful activists voting in the streets like good sheep have not weakened the brutal occupation in any measurable way, a few dozen terrorists willing to slaughter non-combatants were able to cause the withdrawal of more than 1,000 occupation troops. Now, it's an interesting question here because let's suppose it wasn't the Socialists who were running, but let's say a more extreme right-wing party that was the opposition. That might have caused that party to win the election, and let us say an even more, even more troops might have been sent abroad, and more troops might have been used to repress Spanish civil rights for those who were in Spain locally. So I don't know. You've got to consider different aspects of that argument. The actions and statements of cells affiliated with Al-Qaeda do not suggest they want a peace, meaningful peace in Iraq, nor do they demonstrate a concern for the well-being of the Iraqi people, a great many of whom they have blown to bits. So much is a concern for a particular vision of how Iraqi society should be organized, a vision that is extremely authoritarian, patriarchal, and fundamentalist. And no doubt what was possibly an easy decision to kill and maim hundreds of unarmed people, however strategically necessary such an action may have seemed, is connected to their authoritarianism and brutality, and most of all, to the culture of intellectualism for which most terrorists come, although that is another topic entirely. The morality of the situation becomes more complicated when compared to the massive U.S. bombing campaign that intentionally killed hundreds of thousands of civilians in Germany and Japan during World War II. Whereas the campaign was much more brutal than the Madrid bombings, it is generally considered acceptable. The discrepancy that we may entertain between condemning the Madrid bombers, easy, and condemning the even more bloody-minded American pilots, not so easy, perhaps because among them we may find our own relatives, my grandfather, for example, that's the writer here, should make us question whether our condemnation of terrorism really has anything to do with a respect for life. Because we are not fighting for an authoritarian world or one in which blood is spilled in accordance with calculated rationales, the Madrid bombings do not present an example for action, but rather an important paradox. Do people who stick to peaceful tactics that have not proved effective in ending the war against Iraq really care more for human life than the Madrid terrorists? After all, many more than 191 Iraqi civilians have been killed for every 1,300 occupation troops stationed there. If anyone has to die and the U.S. invasion makes this tragedy inevitable, Spanish citizens bear more blame than Iraqis, just as German and Japanese citizens bore more blame than other victims of World War II. So far, no alternatives to terrorism have been developed within the relatively vulnerable belly of the beast to substantially weaken the occupation. Hence, the only real resistance is occurring in Iraq, where the U.S. and its allies are now most prepared to meet it at great cost to the lives of guerrillas and non-combatants. So much for the victories of pacifism. And actually, the whole essay actually talks more about pacifism. But my time is drawing to a close. I've got to go. Coming on next again, we'll be going to have Uncle Dennis live in about half an hour. Until then, we're going to play one of his older shows. I think it's an older show. And hopefully that will tide you over until you can get some of the real stuff with the Dennis the Dennis Meister. He'll be coming on, as I said, at 8:30. I'll be coming back on Sunday. Give me a look-see or a listen-see at 9:30 in the morning on 101.1 FM, which is what you're listening to. And you can also check out the Human Rights Organization. That's an organization meets every Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Firefly Cafe at 131 Front Street. Our concern and their concern, I'm part of that group, to end laws that criminalize poor people and find ways in the belly of the beast to end the war against the poor in Santa Cruz and the war in Iraq. Thank you very much. You might try coming down at noon to the Capitola Recruiting Center and checking out that scene. That's on 41st Avenue, about two blocks from the freeway, and that's happening at noon on Saturday as well. So you can go there, possibly get arrested, get bailed out, and come on down to the Firefly Cafe, which might be a little difficult. Got that time problems, but hey, both perhaps worthy events.
You don't have to get arrested.
No, you don't have to get arrested.
We strongly recommend it.
Well, I don't know. Getting arrested, it's more important. You've got to find effective opposition to stop this the terror machine from proceeding. And believe me, the terror machine is happening every day in Iraq and, of course, Guantanamo. And, hey, in a prison near you, or even on, should we say, a Pacific Avenue near you. So keep your eyes open.
Paradoxically, the more people there, the less people get arrested.
This is true. We have a quick caller here. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Madison.
Yes, Miss Madison 4. What's up?
Well, maybe you can go over the HUD protest on your next show that were this week regarding the home loan crisis, which Bush is basically rewarding the criminals that have screwed everybody with more criminal activity, and there's no help whatsoever in the new program they set up. And then the second thing is they were protesting in D.C. and New Orleans regarding the tear down of low-income housing. Because
right
there's
on.
So many dissident and homeless from the, obviously, the hurricane. They want to be able to come back, but there's nowhere to get a start, which we all know if we've been homeless.
Yeah, Madison, bring it up on Sunday. You know, maybe you can bring up some more information. And if you can, link it to what's happening in Santa Cruz.
What I think we should do is we need to sue
Gotta
cities
do it on Sunday,
for not
Madison.
Doing their low-income duty all over the state and the country.
On Sunday, bring it up.
People need to sue the city for not doing the low, mid-income stuff.
Thank you. And actually, that is being pursued, I believe, by a couple of local organizations, California Rural Legal Assistance, I believe. Anyway, that is it for Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides for today. Tune in again, as I said, on Sunday, and stay tuned for Dennis, Uncle Dennis, that is, from the cream to the dregs. You're going to hear a canned show for the first half hour, but then it gets live, so don't go away. And get in touch with me between times, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you see something happening on the streets, or if you want to be a part of the sleeping ban lawsuit, if you want to volunteer to help, we need your help. You don't have to come to meetings. You just have to have stuff you think you can do for us. And we're interested in all kinds of skills. We've got all kinds of tasks for you. So 423-4833 is the number to call. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Matt, for joining me in the studio on this edition of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides.
Thank you.
Behind the wheel of a large automobile, and you may find yourself myself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. Water flowing under God into the blue again. After the money's gone. Once in a lifetime. Water flowing under God.
And you may ask yourself, how do I work this? And you may ask yourself, where is that large automobile? And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful house. And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife.
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. Water flowing under God. It's a blue again. After the money's gone. Once in a lifetime. Water flowing under God.
Same as it ever was. 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 Water dissolving and water removing. There is water at the bottom of the ocean. Under the water, carry the water.
Everybody, that was Houses in Motion by the Talking Heads. Next we will be playing, it's not from the 60s or 70s, but it's some early hip-hop. It's called Lottie Dottie by Slick Rick. The album's Live 85.
Okay, party people in the house, you're about to witness something you've never witnessed before. Yes, it's the original human beatbox, Dougie Fresh, and his partner, the Grand Wizard, MC Ricky D. D, and that's me in the place to be. And we're going to show you how we do it for 85 Kick It Live, all right? Because I got a funny feeling you're all sick of all these crab rappers biting their rhymes because I'm their backstabbers. But when it comes to me and my friend Doug Fresh here, there is no competition because we are the best, yeah. Finesse and press, which we prove. And y'all will realize that we are the move. So listen close, so you all don't miss. As we go a little something like this. Hit it! Oh, yeah. You know what? Lottie Dottie. Lottie, Lottie. 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 You know what? Yo, peep this. Lottie, Dottie. We like to party. We don't cause trouble. We don't bother nobody. We're just some men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic.
What?
For all of y'all, keeping y'all in health. Just to see you smile and enjoy yourself. Cause it's cool when you cause a cozy condition, Anna, that we create. Cause that's our mission. So listen to what we say. Because this type of shit, it happens every day. I woke up around 10 o'clock in the morning. I gave myself a stretcher. A morning yawning. Went to the bathroom to wash up. Had some soap on my face and my hands upon a cup. I said, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is the top choice of them all? There was a rumble dumble. 5 minutes it lasted. The mirror said,
you are, you conceited bastard.
Well, that's true. That's why we never have no beef. So then I washed off the soap and brushed the gold teeth. You saw I love Olay because my skin gets pale. And then I got the files for my fingernails. Due to the night and on my behalf, I put the bubbles in the tub so I could have a bubble bath. Clean, dry was my body and hair. I threw on my brand new Gucci underwear. For all the girls I might take home, I got the Johnson's baby powder and the Polo cologne. Fresh dress like a million bucks. Threw on the bath. Shoes and the fly green socks. Stepped out my house, stopped short. Oh no, I went back in. I forgot my Kango and then I dilly.
Dally.
I ran through her.
Sally.
I bumped into my old girl.
Sally.
From the
valley.
This is a girl plays hard to get. So I said, what's wrong? Cause she looked upset. She said, it's all because of you. I'm feeling sad and blue. You went away and now my life is filled with rainy days. And I love you so, how much you'll never know. Cause you took your love away from me. Now what was I to do? Just crying over me and she was feeling blue. I said, don't cry, dry your eye. Here comes your mother with those two little guys. Her mean mother stepped up, said to me,
hi.
Looked Sally in the face and decked her in the
eye.
Punched her in the belly and stepped on her
feet.
Slammed the child on the hard concrete. The bitch was strong, the kids was gone. Something was wrong, I said, what is going on? I tried to break it up, I said, stop it, leave her. She said, if I can't have you, she can't either. She grabbed me closely by my socks. So I broke the hell out like I had the chicken pox. But she gave chase, she caught up quick. She put a finger in the face of MC Rick. She said, why don't you give me a plane so we can go cruising in my OJ? And if you give me that okay, I give you all my love today. Ricky, 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 can't you see? Somehow your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your jazzy ways. Oh, MC Rick, my love is here to stay. And on and on and on, she kept on. The bitch been around before my mother's born. I said, cheer up. I gave her a kiss. I said, you can't have me. I'm too young for you, miss. She says, no, you're not. Then she starts crying. I says, I'm 19. She said,
stop lying.
I says, I am. Go ask my mother. And with your wrinkled pussy, I can't be your lover. To the tick-tock, you don't stop. To the tick-tick, and you don't quit. Hit it.